I just took you through the teaching of the natural laws. So each, those four dots in the, on the square there, represent each one of those laws. So kindness, sharing, strength, determination, and honesty. We understood that we would be practicing every one of those aspects when we made treaty. And that the crown on this side, that side, would also, we would be honest with each other, we would be strong in our own beliefs, we would share from each, we would share with each other, we would be kind to each other, and what was the last one? Anyway, so there was this understanding that we would be walking on two paths, living in the same area, but we would never overstep each other. And you can see that by the two lines that are coming down the middle there. On this side, we have our inherent rights. Inherent rights are basically the Creator-given roles, those rights that we are born with by virtue of being born into the nations that we come from. So we have, we had, and we continue to have our own education system, our own health, our own housing, our own laws, our own cultural practices and beliefs, connections to the land and territory, and the ability to make agreements. Those are all inherent rights. I'm not too sure how many people have heard of the concept of inherent rights before, but that's what it is. Simply put, it's the Creator-given roles and responsibilities that Indigenous people are born with. On the crown side here, you can see that it's very different. We have the imperial crown that came with the Royal Proclamation. It introduced the BNA Act of 1867, the Indian Act, the NRTA of 1930, Canada's Constitution of 1982. None of this side contains an Indigenous understanding of what we are and what and how we were supposed to relate as understood during treaties and treaty making and what the treaty relationship contained. So, and those little boxes that you see coming out there, those all represent pieces of legislation that the Canadian state continues to introduce without the informed consent of Indigenous peoples. So every time Canada introduces a piece of legislation, it violates our treaty and treaty relationship. Essentially, it's null and void from our perspective. So that's the difference between our understanding of treaty and how we were meant to coexist together. And in the middle there, I have the promises or rights that we negotiated under treaty, and that's health, education, social, those types of things. So in the oral understanding from what elders have shared, there were three things that the treaty commissioner requested when they came here to make and negotiate treaty with us. And one was that the use that the land would be used to the depth of the plow for the Queen's subjects to farm. The second one was that the trees would be used to construct houses. The third one was that grass for animals would be used to feed the animals brought with by the settlers. And this last part, the treaty rights aspect, the treaty rights of the Queen's subjects were that they could live in peace and share the lands with Indigenous people. And again, I go back to this, in response to the benefits that we were to receive on top of the inherent rights that we still have, had and have, we were supposed to live and to coexist for there to be mutual respect and mutual recognition of each other's existences. That has not happened. And another part of this teaching, there's an elder, I think, in Frog Lake, Sylvia, that holds the 10 sticks. Do you remember? Frog Lake, yeah. So at the time when the treaties were being made, we knew that the Crown and the Treaty Commissioner had their own perspective already, because they already came with a written document already prefabricated without even translating that document to us. And our ancestors said, okay, well, we know that the Queen and the Crown already have their version of what the treaties contain. We need to have our own way of remembering what the promises were made from between the negotiations. And they have these 10 sticks, and there's an elder from Frog Lake, which is a nation that's about an hour and 15 minutes from where I'm from, that has these 10 sticks. And they represent the 10 promises that were made. So after negotiation, these were the promises that were made of what was to be contained in the treaty. So we have healthcare. In the written text of the treaty, it's called the medicine chest clause. We have education. There's a schoolhouse provision in there. Water. We said that we would never give up the rights and access to water or what lived in the water. Birds. The queen's subjects would bring her own birds. And this specifically speaks to the Migratory Birds Convention, which I think was in 1930. I can't remember the specific date, but anyway, Canada made a treaty with Mexico and the states regarding birds. Social assistance, there was a pestilence and famine clause. So any time that we were in need, we understood that we would be taken care of. Minerals, which is kind of the hot debate right now, it always has been, we said that we never gave up our rights or access to the minerals or the resources that are under the land below six fingers to the depth of the plow. Even though Canada continues to get rich off of our lands, our resources, and we see very minimal, maybe 1%, maybe even less than that. We see nothing. The Indian agent was actually supposed to be a servant to Indigenous peoples. He was supposed to be the person that was the go-between from Indigenous peoples and the Queen to bring messages back and forth of what was happening and the concerns. The farm instructor, there was supposed to be an appointment of a farm instructor, and they were supposed to supply equipment for farming. Treaty money. This was a gift from the Queen for entering into treaty. When I was doing some research here, and this is another topic up for that hasn't been looked into yet, at the time, at the original time of treaty, we were given $12. Now we're given $5. $7 was put into a land trust that was to be used at a later date. So when you hear this issue of taxes, that we don't pay taxes, or we, that Canadian taxpayer money is supporting in Indigenous peoples and reserves, that's so untrue. The money comes out of a trust fund, and we still have yet to figure out what the accumulation of that $7 is today. Treaty citizenship. Indigenous peoples were to control their own citizenship. Up until 1950, I think, or 1951. 50 or 51, Sylvia? 51. we had treaty cards. Now we have status cards. Status cards and treaty cards are two complete different things. The political and legal identities created, ascribed for us in what is status, comes from the Indian Act, which is completely different than what a treaty card is and what being a treaty citizen is. And I want to leave you with these words. I'll just read it. Only agreements entered into with the indigenous peoples of the territory can give any legitimacy to the use and occupancy of the lands. Canada must recognize the position of the traditional governments that entered into treaty with the British Crown. To discount the legitimate governments of Indigenous peoples is to discount Canada's own legitimacy. This is the work of Sharon Venn. She's a Cree lawyer. She's also specializes in international law. She's done a lot of work in the area of treaty. So here are some other questions. Can a state lay claim to lands through a treaty process with Indigenous peoples while at the same time denying the rights of Indigenous peoples? How do we inform Canada, Canadians, of their obligations to honor treaty? And what does it mean to decolonize Canada? So that's all. Thank you.